to MGO Radio 3.1. This might not actually be reaching anybody right now, but we have a podcast that we can post afterwards.
Yeah.
So, sorry for the technical difficulties, everybody. Sometimes you eat the bar and sometimes...
Sure. Yeah.
Speaking of the bar eating people...
That Florida game.
Oh, man. So, usually in this segment, we talk about kind of the things we learned after... UFRing the case, watching it once and feeling...
Hey, I read the UFRs, you know.
And reading the UFRs, yeah. So,
watched it twice, thank you very much.
We will start with the defense because why not?
It's a good place to start.
Michigan comes out with a 3-3-5. That's pretty obvious. And you know, the thing that kind of stuck out to review is that, you know, a couple times they actually had that personnel out there and they would put Gary as a defensive tackle and they'd put Furbush down as an end.
Yes.
So they have kind of a four-man line look from that. They want to be diverse with it, and I don't actually know how much they really showed. So,
yeah, I mean, they were pretty much in that three-man basic front for almost the entire game and weren't showing – given the variety of defenses that you can – variety of looks that you can run out of, it seems like they were pretty vanilla.
Yeah, which was a little bit odd because vanilla is the last thing you expect the 3-5 to be, but
– especially a Tom Brown 3-3-5.
Right, like whenever they needed that linebacker to be an extra defensive lineman, it almost always Furbush.
Yeah.
And it was almost always Furbush inserting on a particular side of him. So I bet they have a bunch more stuff that they practiced and needed. Well, they didn't need to bring it out.
Yeah.
Was encouraging, but also a little less encouraging because it's like, okay, this Florida team is so lame. We don't do anything.
Like they didn't need to change up from the one weird curveball they threw.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And just kept throwing it. Yeah, I mean, it is tough because it... You know, Florida has all those suspensions. They are talented, but their offense has been kind of a mess. Normal game ones, even against good teams, it's sometimes tough to extrapolate a lot from, and this is a game where that seemed particularly the case just because of the state of Florida's program right now. But at the same time, the defense was just so good with the defense that we weren't even expecting them to run.
Yeah.
That it's hard not to be pretty excited about them coming out of that one.
I mean, that was one of my number one takeaways. I look for things that were open but didn't actually come off, and there was like the one like terrifying that Zaire didn't even look at, and then
yeah.
There was the Winovich thing, which isn't like a tactical error in his job quite, and
on the touchdown that was held back,
yeah, and the secondary were no busts, there were no open receivers,
yeah, which when you're working with a bunch of first year starters, that's pretty, because Florida, I mean, they might not have the most refined wideouts, but they have a lot of good athletes out there.
Yeah.
And part of getting beat is just staying with a guy.
Yeah.
And Watson was able to do that down the sideline on that authoritative pass breakup. I mean, and that was like the guy that we were worried about, really, with staying stride for stride with guys.
I mean, he does that, and he's like hyped up. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, same thing.
Yeah. Like, I feel the same way. I wasn't expecting that either.
No, I was like.
That was sweet.
And then Tyree Cleveland had the... kind of improv catch where he skied up and got 20 yards on Watson, but
tough to stop that.
My main takeaway from that is that he jammed the guy, and then when that guy hitched up, he was in his breadbasket.
Yeah,
there was no throw there, and that is more important than like what happens on a scramble drill. Because a scramble drill, you're gonna get got sometimes. But
yeah, especially when the wideout can jump 10 feet in the air and
yeah,
reach
guy,
back like that. And Cleveland's an athlete.
That guy has some talent.
Yeah.
And for
it'd be nice to see him in a real offense.
Well, as long as Michigan's playing.
Yeah, true. But,
So I thought Watson was good. I thought Hill had the one big issue where he lost track of the ball and got hit for a big one. I thought mm-hmm. the first completion on was just
that was a tight window.
Yeah, and hit inch perfect. And when that happens,
yeah.
I remember when Jordan Lewis was a freshman, like that happened to him about six times
that,
in a row.
That was his. He was cursed by the gypsy his whole freshman year.
Yeah, like the Akron quarterback was dropping dimes on him the whole time.
And I'm like, how is this happening?
And I'm like taking screenshots of like Jordan Lewis with his arm outstretched and the ball going like an inch over it.
Like between two fingers.
So I think you can get a feel for the shape of what a secondary looks like, even having some completions.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much close to the best case.
Yeah, nothing over the top. Couple tight windows hit. Maybe one play that you'd really like to have back.
But that'll happen.
Yeah.
And then the safeties were, like, they were, on the first snap of the game, they were like, all right, Tyree Cannell is no longer a safety. He's now a cornerback. And, like, I think it was long safety.
Yeah.
And that speaks to how much confidence they have in him. And that's something that I thought really came through not only with him, but also with Metellus.
Yes. He looked excellent in coverage. And that's especially encouraging because we've already seen him come up and support the run pretty well. We know he's got range from the safety spot. We know he can hit. But coverage was the thing that we weren't as sure about, and he passed his first test pretty easily.
And he made a lifelong enemy in Brandon Powell.
Oh, man. That whole play did not go so well for poor Brandon Powell.
So he discards Powell before the Felipe Franks fumble, and then Marshall runs him over. And then later in the game, that 4th-and-3, which was Florida's last gasp, they go to Powell against Metellus.
And Metellus is blanketing him.
And also interfering with him.
You know.
But this is...
we'll call it blanketing.
Well, and then this is why we have the term Rubbins Racing.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, a Days of Thunder reference for all the 1990s Tom Cruise fans out there.
But it's got hordes of them.
That's a good movie. So I had the Days of Thunder NES game, not to date myself. What was I talking about before Days of Thunder?
Rubens Racing, yeah, and Metellus.
Very, very professional podcast.
Indeed.
But, you know, that's a slot receiver, and that reminded me a lot of Delano Hill.
Yes.
Because that was what he did against Indiana to win that game. That was one of the things that he really brought to this defense, is an ability to cover the slot receiver in man coverage.
And that's why he was a 4th-round pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if Metellus can do that, along with being mean old Josh Metellus, that's... I mean, man, these Flanagan kids.
Like Devin Gill comes in, and we weren't expecting anything out of Devin Gill.
No, because nobody had said his name for the entirety of
the quietest offseason.
And then all of a sudden,
a scholarship player that we can remember, and then he's out there for when Mike McCray's dehydrated, and the defense doesn't miss a beat, really.
No, he makes one pretty decent play where he flows the sideline and tackles. But, yeah, and he's the guy who's, like, trailing the pack, because Metellus is a starter, and, man, Devin Bush. I best linebacker debut since I've
been. Is that the highest grade you've given out for a linebacker that, like, actually plays linebacker?
Maybe. Like, I feel like that's a good disclaimer, because I think Peppers probably hit something along last year. But, like, for a middle linebacker, that is a huge grade.
That was an absurd score.
And
if it, like, it doesn't... I wasn't surprised when I saw that he graded out that well. I watched that game twice.
But so I give out a +3 on a sack. It beat a blocker and sack the guy by yourself. And it's not some, there's not some mitigating factor.
Yeah.
And Devin Bush did that twice.
And the one where Don Brown dials up that crazy loop around blitz.
Yeah.
He has to cover, and really on both of them, he had to cover so much ground just to get to Franks.
And it
wasn't like that was a play where you think the quarterback's holding the ball too long. He just managed to really close that ground quickly.
No, both of those kind of felt like, for many players, those would incomplete.
Yeah.
Because, like, the quarterback would flush, and then, like, you'd get a pressure, but the guy would be able to get the ball away. And to be able to run those guys down, they're both athletic guys, is really something.
Yeah, that was kind of across the board, really, for Michigan on Saturday. There was, I think the Florida quarterbacks were a little surprised by their closing speed on a few occasions. There was the three-man, this was late, but the three-man rush against Zaire where Winovich closes down that gap and gets a hit on him, he covered 15 yards in a flash. I don't think Zaire was expecting to get crushed on that throw.
No, he definitely wasn't, because he jumps, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't a good idea. And then Hudson had a couple of similar plays on a waggle where he's out there, he checks, he sees that he's got license to go up and get the quarterback, and he closes that distance in a flash. So...
there's a lot of speed on this team.
It feels like a really, really fast team.
You've got defensive linemen tackling on tunnel screens.
Like, what's the slowest guy on this defense? Is it Brandon Watson, the guy who just
the first person we threw out was a corner?
Right.
Oh, man. That's messed up. Might not even be wrong.
I don't know. It's probably McCray, right?
Yeah.
He's had some edges last year.
Yeah. I mean, it may actually be Mo Hurst over, like, it depends how many yards we're talking about here.
You know, relative to your position.
Yeah.
Like.
Okay, and then in that case, it's probably either McCray or Watson. McCray is, like, some people's best inside linebacker heading into the NFL draft next year. Watson's the third corner.
And he just D'd up on some 4-stars really well.
So, defense is looking pretty good.
Like, the best case scenario, really.
Yeah, I mean, they outscored Florida's offense. It's hard not to feel good about that.
Like, honestly, the only thing that I think could have gone better against Florida is, like, Rashawn Gary doing more speed-to-power stuff instead of edge rushes.
Just trying to maul some people. He did get upfield a little bit a couple times.
Right, and, like, that's my complaint.
Our complaint is Rashawn Gary wasn't awesome enough.
Right. And, like, I've done these charts forever, and this one was the most dominant I've done against like a real opponent, I think. Like, I'm sure the Delaware State one, why would I even UFR that?
But there were some dark days in there, man, it when was, it needed to.
It was, like, I'm just putting this chart together, and I'm like, like, sometimes I add up the numbers, and I'm like, oh, that's Homer-ish. And then I go back, and I double-check just to make sure that I'm actually, like, in the ballpark, and like, I gotta...
Because that was a clean sweep, every player grading out positive.
Yeah, and, like, a couple of the cornerbacks were, like, plus 1 or plus 1.5, but then you got to go look at that coverage metric, which was plus 20 and minus 3.
Yeah, they're doing that on a very low number of events happening. Cause yeah. Between the defensive line pressure and the coverage downfield, there wasn't a lot to throw at.
No. And God bless Don Brown.
For real.
And God bless Jim Harbaugh for going and hiring, like, the most college DC. I feel like we got... Who's the defensive coordinator at...
Justin Fuente?
No, the DC.
Oh, the DC.
Who's been there for suddenly escapes me.
Oh, God.
Bud
yeah,
Foster.
Yeah, Bud Foster.
I feel like we got to hire Bud Foster.
Yes.
Which is something that you don't get to do because Bud Foster is Bud Foster.
Except, like, grizzled cop Bud Foster,
right.
Which makes it even better.
But just a guy who you know is an elite college coordinator and a lifer at that position.
Yeah.
So, like...
And Don Brown also adds in the whole, like, he knows, like, 27 East Coast coaches that nobody else outside of the region has ever even heard of. Like,
yeah.
There's so many random little bonuses to having him, but the, you know, the main one's having, you know, a top five defense every year, it looks like. That's a pretty good bonus.
And how about the scouting on the lower rated guys? We kind of touched on this when we were talking about the Flanagan.
Yeah, like Bush was on like kind of the 3-4-star borderline because of his size, and man, that dude is incredible.
And like, Michigan, like, stop recruiting Caleb Kelly, a 5-star who starts for Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
Stop recruiting David Reese, who was starting for Florida and had and picked up a few spots starts for them last year.
And, you know, as this was happening, I was like, I'm not really a fan of what's going on here.
I did not feel great about the, like, David Reese, Devin Bush situation when it was going down.
Yeah.
It just seemed like you got the bird in the hand. Like, at least tell him he's going to play linebacker. Like, let him enroll.
But
now it's like, you know what? However you decided to do that, fine. This looked great.
And, like, it was weird because, like, Metellus and Gill kind of felt like add-ons so that they would get Devin Bush.
And now Metellus is a critical piece of this defense, and Gill looks like the valuable depth player at the very least.
So, and those are some of the lowest rated players in that recruiting class.
Yeah.
Bush less so than the others, but still a guy who looks like he's going to outperform at scouting. I mean, it's really good when you can see that trust the coaches is something that you should actually, and
yes.
A lot of the personnel on this defense are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other thing that kind of became clear when I was doing this is that there wasn't a lot that we could tell about the second string because I just didn't get out there very much.
Yeah.
But Carlo Kemp did get a few snaps early in the game after Gary kind of had one of I got too far upfield mm-hmm. plays.
The Frank scramble, I believe.
Yeah, and he got out there and he was targeted on the first snap that he was out there and he defeated a blocker and got off and made a tackle.
Yeah, really nice shed and tackle on the end.
So that's a really good sign for his future. And I think the last snap of the game was a sack that Uche and Bembasse.
Nice.
Bembasse, right?
Bembasse.
Thank you. They had a twist blitz, Michigan State style, and Uche went like through two linemen, and Bembasse forced the quarterback up into the pocket, and he kind of bounced off Uche, and that's a sack. So that's a good sign for those two guys. And, of course, Devin Gill got some time in as well and totally functional.
Yeah.
Which is so weird.
Yeah,
basically everyone you throw out there, it's like, oh, that guy's good too.
Yeah, it's a very different feel looking through. I mean, there's still time left, but these Harbaugh classes compared to the Hoke classes, where like the bottom end of Hoke classes, kind of just write off for the most part.
Yeah, also the top ends,
a large swath of those classes. But yeah, at this point, it's just you know hit after hit, and so I mean, even though Harbaugh has only been able to bring in relatively small classes,
well, the first one was like a.
I mean, it was just a funky hybrid class, too.
Yeah, yeah. That was like a 14.
But it even looked like he was hitting on Keith Washington until Washington transferred.
Yeah, I still regret that.
Yeah.
That would have been useful to have that guy around.
Yeah.
But best case scenario on the defense and probably better than is reasonable for best case. Like, they
certainly
straight up dominated that team, and I know that Florida has not had a good offense, but they had 150 yards of offense, mostly on broken plays and a couple of downfield shots before garbage time, and let's go.
Yeah. No, that was about as good as it gets.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the offense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individuals. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters for a priority for them, and he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage, and he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-539-950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 11613.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 3.1. We are recorded on location in the Bow Store on Main Street, so stop by and glare at us, perhaps. We're thanking our guest author, John U. Bacon, because this is an old one.
Hey-o.
And in the chaos of our technical difficulties, I neglected our fine sponsor. So I'm going to do that now. We are sponsored by Underground Printing, the Bow Store, Homesure Lending, the Alumni Association, University of Michigan, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Peak Wealth Management.
Lantana Hummus, we're now on brand with our visuals, if you've been watching the live feed.
So, like, Rishi brought a camera, and it's ruining our It's a Very Visual Podcast joke.
It really is.
So we're...
So we're hiding behind things.
We're rebelling. We're...
Trying to set up a perimeter.
We're the worst people to sponsor.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know why anybody does it, but please continue doing it. I enjoy doing this for a living.
Yeah, we've got a gimmicky...
It's really wonderful.
A gimmicky top five of places to go pre- or post-game coming up.
No and sponsors.
None of those places sponsor us.
If you're interested, holler at us.
Yeah.
We do like money. And, you might not like our live reads, and, but we do like money.
And your food and or drink.
Indeed.
We should do like a worst five restaurants in Ann Arbor. And
that's how to really reel them in.
That's,
we'll leave you off our list if, hey,
I don't
sponsorship by bribery. Let's
now,
do it.
Now I'm trying to figure out like what the worst five restaurants in Ann Arbor are.
Yeah, you will actually make this.
Oh, I've got one. I should.
No, don't. Not. We just talked about this.
Come on. All right.
The offense, Florida.
Yes. All right, let's talk about that. So the big controversy in the aftermath is the performance of Wilton Spate. You know, I got my take out on the blog. I'd like to hear like your take.
I mean, I think there's a certain part of him that is going to be difficult to trust for a while because we have seen shaky moments out of him. They're a little unpredictable.
Yeah.
I thought the first interception was more on Crawford than on Spate. That's a catchable throw that's thrown into a tight window that hits him in both hands.
Yeah.
The second interception was a terrible throw. He did miss the wide open wheel route, which turned out not to bite them, but that was an easy throw to make, and he check, horrible throw.
His mistakes are big mistakes.
They really are. And that's the concerning thing when you're a team that's trying to make the playoff, and that's where this team is at, is that this is a potential playoff team and a potential title team of the thing, Blake, right?
That's where you're at, right? Like after
watching that defense? Heck yeah.
Okay.
Heck yeah. I said potential. I didn't say lock.
I mean,
that's kind of, you know, heading into the year, I said 10-2, you know.
I mean,
flip one game, and there's your playoff bid.
I mean, it's 10-2, and they've already won one of the games single digits.
Exactly. And they won it handily.
Emphatically.
So Spate, I mean, I don't think he's going to ever be this just killer. Like, we'll see flashes of it, but I don't know if he's ever going to be this killer quarterback all the time, just because there have been these blips, and I don't know if you're totally going to iron those out. But
yeah.
I don't think he's as inconsistent as fans think he is.
There is a definite.
There was a lot that happened. You know, the stretch run last year is hard to erase, and the thing is, there were, other than the beginning of the Iowa game, there were serious mitigating circumstances. And considering those circumstances, he did quite well. So I'm optimistic that he'll be like an All Big Ten level quarterback this year. I think people holding out for him to turn into an All-American can probably...
Are those people in existence?
There are people who think every Michigan quarterback should be an All-American, right? Well,
and those people are the maddest.
Yes.
Fate. I mean, I feel like I'm Mr. Random. Like, I always want to, like, not overreact because...
Yeah, like, things happen. We're working with small samples all the time.
And I feel like people are talking about all the bad things that have happened to Spate, and I'm, okay, we have been maximally punished as an organization for Spate's mistakes.
Yeah.
So he fumbles a snap, and they lose it, which happens, like, what, 30% of the time when you fumble a snap? Probably not
even. If that.
And he gets hit, and it goes directly to an opponent for a pick six.
Yeah.
That's not really even on him, but I feel like a lot of people are still putting that from the Ohio State game. And then, of course, he does throw a really bad interception.
There was one of those.
But...
I think Spate is better than what most people in the Michigan fan base think right now.
There's been a lot of, like, Spate negativity this week.
And going back over the game, like, man, that throw to Eubanks, the deep throw, that was inch perfect.
Yeah, and he had, like, probably four deep throws that were that good.
Yeah. So there's, like, the throw to Crawford that drew the PI was going to be a gorgeous dead-on throw, except he gets grabbed twice.
Yeah. And then he's got the post to Perry.
Yes.
And then, I mean, the black one was, but
he hit it.
And he did the right thing there where he's like, all right, I'm just going to make this dumb, easy throw.
Yeah, just don't throw it out of the end zone.
So I think people are really up in arms about his deep ball ability after the Iowa game, and I didn't feel like that was...
No, and we saw the Pro Football Focus stat where he graded out as the best passer rating quarterback on passes of 20 yards or more in the Big Ten.
I mean, I do feel like he's...
Yes, I would very much agree with that.
And I feel like that's not a great trait if you want to
You prefer
win
just
games.
Consistently solid.
Right,
but, As streaky quarterbacks go, he's getting more good than bad in there at this point, and there's a lot of upside there.
Yeah,
the team's clearly quite comfortable with him.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said for the fact that he does seem to bounce back from those mistakes without much issue a lot of the time.
Yeah, but you never really know when he's gonna go off a cliff for a little bit.
Yeah, that's the disconcerting part.
There
was in this game, he did have Lizio letting a lot of pressure in his face. There were a couple throws that were impacted by that. Not the interception.
No.
But he did have some pressure that he could see to deal with, and that can be a little distracting for a quarterback.
You know, a little bit. I really buy that as for why his performance in the Florida State game was better than at first. But, I mean, honestly, like, I thought the pass protection was okay, and maybe even a little better than that.
Yeah, I mean, it was really just that one spot that was leaking through.
Yeah, and then Cole on, like, Michigan's last offense just got worked. And there's like a blindside sack.
Took it off one play too early.
But honestly, I mean, Cole's a really interesting guy to talk about from this game, because this is a team that entered expecting that they had four or five defensive ends who really go get it.
Yeah.
They're playing Mason Cole, a guy who had his struggles against top flight rushers as a left tackle. Mm-hmm. And I got him for like one pass pro minus stunt. But when it was like just straight up, let's try to block this guy who's trying to pass rush, he was perfect until the last play of the game. And honestly, I'll take that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If he gets worked once in a game by CC Jefferson and company, like, okay.
Yeah, that's fine, especially since with Spate back there, you don't know if that's even going to result in a sack.
Yeah, and then on the ground, he was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know. I missed his various Mason Cole.
Just blocks in space.
Yeah, like yeah. The stuff he was able to do as a sophomore, as a left tackle, couldn't really do very much as a center, and he was back on.
Yeah.
The thing where he throws a guy upfield and then goes and wrecks a safety 20 yards downfield, you just know that he's going to find a guy to block, and he's actually going to obliterate him, which is really hard to do because you're in a ton of space, you're trying to block a defensive back.
Yeah, you're going against a guy who's probably like 110 pounds lighter than you and faster, more than that.
And he's just utterly consistent.
Yeah.
It was like welcoming an old friend back.
It sure was.
An old, very mean friend.
And also, he's got kind of a tag team partner now in Ben Bredesen.
Yes. You know, you always hope that you get like a big leap from a freshman to a sophomore year, but you never really know it until you see it. We kind of thought that Bredesen was making that just because of the depth chart where they're just like, yeah, this guy's the starting left guard.
He's just locked in the whole time.
There was no question about that the whole time. He really paid that off as well. So he and Cole were executing scoop blocks, which are double teams and very difficult to get right a lot, and they were killing it. And his mental errors, which were his big problem a year ago, were almost entirely absent.
Yeah.
Like maybe there was one or two in there. And man, if that keeps up, like even as a true freshman, I didn't think he was physically over. He just didn't know why.
Yeah.
He's had a full season at left guard and a full offseason left guard, and this is his locked in. I think he's an all Big Ten guard now.
And that's just such a huge piece to have in there, especially since, you know, Kugler looks solid.
He does.
And on Wainu, had his ups and downs, but you can see the potential there.
Yeah. So he had a real rough start, and then I thought initially that they brought in Runyon to give him like a breather.
Yeah.
But it was not that. It was because he was really struggling. They basically sat him down for them. They sat Spate down. And like Spate, he responded.
Yeah.
So he still had an up and down game. Didn't get to our mid two-thirds, third bad. But he climbed above zero after starting at 0.5 and 20. So that's a pretty good pattern for a guy who's in his first start.
Yeah, and Florida does have some very good defensive tackles.
Dude, their three tech is awesome.
Yeah, they've got some really good defensive one.
I looked him up. He's from Wyoming.
That's a random pull.
He was like a...
I bet he was number one in the state.
Yeah, sure. I think he was like a 3.5-star kind of guy because you can't get full 4 stars out of Wyoming.
It's a Quiddy Pie.
But like someone on Florida did scout there because that kid was... Like he would explode off the line and he'd get himself stuck between two offensive linemen and they just didn't know what to do because they couldn't leave him because he's going to go tackle the back. So got hung up on him a ton.
And yeah, he was keeping linebackers clean.
Yeah, and I was like, I'll take that guy.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. We played Florida, and there was like one guy. I was like, "I'll take him."
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Ivy. I probably Ivy.
Yeah. Although I kind of think that touchdown was on him.
Well, no, it was on the guard.
He was expecting it, but the guard was looking for the linebacker to blitz. You can't just let a guy get that far inside of you when your guard has to check the blitz first.
I don't know.
There was nobody else on the outside to block.
His reaction
was amazing.
Was definitely like, that is on you, buddy.
Yeah, but
because the play is still going on, and he grabs him and he points at the quarterback.
Yeah,
about to die. That's
why I included the broadcast angle of that play and the replay and the gifts post, because the replay was better for the most part, but the broadcast angle caught the whole just like, what the heck was that, dude? And that needed to be in there, but man, I don't know. Either way, I'd probably take one of their linemen to put in at right tackle.
It's like they accidentally launched a nuclear weapon, and they're like, look what you did. Why did you turn the key while I was also turning the key?
Yeah, Chase Winovich didn't mind.
No, he did not.
He did not wait to see whose screw-up it was either.
He probably... we should talk about Nolan Elizio, who got like a horrible score in UFR that I'm not sure I entirely buy. I know I gave him that score.
Yeah, wait, man. You did the grading.
This happens sometimes. Like I get done and I'm like, ugh. So what was happening pretty consistently is that they'd have a defensive end between him and the tight end, and he would go leave or work elsewhere. And the tight end would not be able to block the defensive end.
And you would ding him for this.
Yes, because that's just it's not
the right play.
It's how it goes, right? It was so consistent, I thought it might be a schematic or a coaching issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to find that out going forward. You know, when he was actually making contact with people, and he looked fine on the ground, there were so many mental issues, and he had a couple of... early Ben Braden kind of like lunge Olay blocks where he got straight up beat by a guy who dodged him. So a really rough start. He had six pass pro minuses as well, a couple directly leading to sacks. It's not like I expected anything.
No, I mean, that was a tough position for him to be in starting his first game against that group of defensive linemen. And it kind of went how we were afraid it would go and expected it to go.
Yeah, but I'm not like going to throw in the towel just yet. This is a guy who has a couple of reasons why he would have a steady upward mobility position.
Yeah.
As he gets more practice time. A guy who was actually, I think, second or third Harbaugh recruit ever.
Yeah.
And a guy that, I mean, we're just talking about their ability to scout on defense. Like, hopefully Eluzio and those guys, and he will bounce up from a rough start.
Yeah, and got a few weeks to kind of get it under control before they really hit serious competition again, too.
Yeah, I mean, his situation is such that I expect some struggles against Cincinnati, too. Just
oh, definitely.
But, like, mitigating those and kind of stabilizing yourself as the right tackle is going to be something that's going to be for the next 3-4 weeks. And
it might be one of the very few interesting things over that period of time.
I mean, I don't know. I like...
Blowouts are fun, too.
I like touchdowns.
Yeah.
But... he's a guy who just hope he can get solidified by the time we're talking about him.
Yes.
Will he? I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, that was a rough start, but
yeah. And
there's a serious competition caveat there with Florida, and a first start caveat. So hopefully things gel.
And you know, I wrote down TE blocking with a question mark afterwards because Harbaugh was talking after the game about how there was struggles tight end blocking, and I think that was true. I had -2 blocks for each of the redshirt freshmen, and that's going to happen, especially because these guys are often kind of oversized. And McCune had a couple of similar issues. So getting those guys together and getting them functional tight end blockers is going to be a work in progress. I did think Wheatley was...
Yeah, he did like completely cave in the entire side of a line on one play. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, and a lot of the things where he ended up chasing someone to the back were... You know, Eluzio,
the right tackle leaving.
Yeah, tackle leaves, and then the defensive end slants. And that's an almost impossible block to make, and I've watched a lot of that, far too much of it. And I don't put any of that on Wheatley. I put it on the tackle or the scheme that had him in. So... I think that's a good thing for Wheatley because we're always, you know, you hear about him in practice and that they're still trying to get him to be a temp blocker. I thought he did a good job against a tough defense.
Yeah.
You know, that's about it. Like, we didn't see, like, a ton from the wide receivers that was notable other than Grant Parrott was really good.
Yes.
And we talked about that in the podcast. I don't have any different opinion. Like, oh, that's a good player.
Yeah. Tariq Black looks promising.
Yes, sir.
Don't drop that one pass.
Yeah,
and we get to really promising.
But yeah.
They've got guys.
We've got some dudes. We didn't see Oliver Martin, which I was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, and a disappointment to you, I'm sure.
I'm.
You're in the bag for Oliver Martin.
I am in the bag for Oliver Martin. So offense, I thought, I mean, they put up 450 yards against a really good defense.
Yeah, they did. They ran the ball well for the most part. With three different backs all looking pretty good.
Yeah, the backs were decisive. Isaac really knew when to bounce it out, and the two guys had a couple of similar incidents when they saw the opportunity and took it. I kind of think that they missed a few, like Evans in particular, and I know he...
There was an offset draw that Higdon really missed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was... No, that was a sprint draw.
Sorry, a sprint draw. It was a draw, and he missed a huge hole.
I used to call it that goddamn counter draw, because
that
was
that
the...
one.
that was the Braylon Fest issue.
Yeah, it sure was.
But no, Braylon Fest happened, so
yes.
we shouldn't.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not bitter.
No, you be bitter about one of the most hilarious and excellent in Michigan history. And the sprint counter draw made it all possible by putting us in a 17-point hole.
It did.
But I thought the backs looked good, and I think that's important because, you know, you lose Ty Wheatley, and you bring in Jay Harbaugh. And, you know, Jay Harbaugh is not a guy who's NFL was a running back for a date.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always some question, you know, is there going to be a fall off? Like, Harbaugh, the younger, has been, I think, an asset for the program. I think a lot of the stuff, that he's a good recruiter. You just don't know about his proficiency as a position coach. And after the last few years, I've come around on my previous opinion. It just doesn't matter as running back. Because I think Wheatley did really good work.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can see that continue. And honestly, Chris Evans is probably coaching himself.
For real.
Because he's coaching at all other hours of the
so
day and night.
Why wouldn't he be? But there was, I mean, that was an interesting thing from Jay Harbaugh's presser this week was he talked about how a big part of his coaching is just constant feedback from his players. So maybe that is just Chris Evans coaching the entire position group. The pieces are starting to come together. Evans.
That
there it
awesome.
Is.
He's going to be the head coach here in like 30 years.
I'm so excited for it. The hair better still be just that big old flat top. He's supremely disappointed.
Going a little gray. That would be awesome. I think I'm out of Florida offense.
Offensive takeaways, yeah. I mean, it would have been a bigger points explosion if not for a couple unlucky moments. Yeah. One unlucky moment and one just...
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with a gimmicky top five. That has been.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the line, you want a Michigan man, call former prosecutor and at 248-99458. Visit his website, Michigan Law.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us for those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves. This is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I want to know if you 250-yard field.
I have not.
Well, then I anything.
I mean, I don't have the hairdo either, so that's a couple knocks, Kent.
Could you do that? You could. Come on. You've never done anything weird with your hair.
If he hits two more a game, you know what? I don't want to get into this.
Wait, no. That's so if he hits two more 50-yard field goals in the same game.
I'm saying like every game from here on
No, come on, like. 250-yard field goals in one game again this year.
Again, I have to do the wild thing haircut.
Yep, there we go.
All right.
That's pretty unlikely, right?
I sure hope so now.
All right, we have a gimmicky top five. It is a home opener-related gimmicky top five.
It is.
So you've gone to the game or you're going to the game, and these are the places you should go afterwards for...
Or on your way there, depending on how...
Or on your way there for libations,
mm-hmm.
or perhaps comestibles.
One of my things is food related.
One? I mean, oh, you have libations.
Yes.
Why am I drinks? $10 words. Get
a very professional and fancy ass podcast over here.
Shot walking into the saloon. You like your pretty words, boy. Anyway.
Anyway.
All right, Ace, you're number five.
It's the one you don't like. Okay. I have Dominic's.
Yeah.
I know you have thoughts on it, but.
So you like. You
I
like,
just, I mean,
you're like Charles Shaw with an orange in it, huh?
You know, I do enjoy the sangria. I know they're a little pricey for what they do, but just you've got like best outdoor seating of any bar in Ann Arbor, probably, where you've got
sure
like a large outdoor seating area instead of just like a few metal tables out on the sidewalk. Pretty decent food, and just I don't know, like part of Dominic's draw is definitely that it's a seasonal place that's open only when the weather's right for it, and that to me, I enjoy being there because I know that it's one of those times where I don't hate living in Michigan.
There are Dominic's like obsessives.
There are. I don't get the people who are like that is their bar and that is the one bar that they go to, but as like the first stop after a game, or you know, as part of a multi-stop tour, shall I say, that would be on my list.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan.
You've made your
All right, my number five is Seoul Garden,
which
is a Korean barbecue place down on Eisenhower. And the reason that I think it's a really good place to go after the game is I've never been in it and seen it like full. So after
that is a big draw.
There's going to be a ton of people there. You might have to wait in huge lines for everything. Or you could go get some banchan and do some Korean barbecue at a place that is off the beaten path and delicious. So, yeah.
I actually left a place or two from Ipsy off of here and was thinking about including it for the reason that if you can get 15 minutes outside of town, it's great to not be in a place that's totally packed. So sidetrack for people who...
Sidetrack would be totally packed, though, wouldn't it?
I mean, it's kind of totally packed all the time, but like it wouldn't be any more or less so than usual. And there are several other great places around there, too.
All right, Ace, you're number four.
NYPD for just easy grab food. You're near a bunch of stuff. It's probably going to be pretty crowded after a game, but if you can get in, you can get a full pizza. You can get pizza by the slice. They have like a gazillion different specialty pizzas. I think they do pizza about as well as anybody in Ann Arbor. And then you're smack in the middle of everything when you want to go for your libations afterwards.
Should I not have used that word?
I mean, I think the evidence is piling up.
Oh, come on.
You called yourself out, man. Yeah. I'm just piling on.
This is maybe not a good, because it's Angelo's. Okay. Angelo's is delicious.
It is.
But on a game day, you might not be able to get it. Because they don't take reservations.
It's going to be really tough. Because you're not going to be the only person wanting to go to Angelo's.
But if you're in town at like 6 in the morning.
Yeah. If you're one of those crack of dawn tailgaters.
Go get it.
Oof. And, that's the best breakfast in town.
Well, the first two times I went there, I didn't get it. I was like, what is this place? This is... bleh. And then I got something with hollandaise sauce on it. And that's sold. Like, that's... Yep. Get the hollandaise sauce and on anything, on everything. Get the...
Yeah, put it on your waffles. Who cares? Yeah. Just
that's just where it's at, and it's like there's a lot of like kind of classic Ann Arbor places that kind of get by on reputation. Angelo's is not one of them.
Indeed.
All right, Ace, you're number three.
Grizzly Peak, another spot that I'm choosing in large part because of location.
Continue,
sorry.
Please.
Brief technical difficulty. Grizzly Peak. You're right downtown. They're brewing their own beers. They do a good job of it. And I don't know. I just like there's a good, like, it's kind of like half outside, half inside, especially once you get the game day crowd there. Sidewalk can get a little crowded, but I just enjoy that bar. I like the way it's set up. It's good beer. Doesn't have to be too fancy.
My number three is actually downstairs of Grizzly Peak. It's Old German.
Fair enough, yeah.
Which is a new place that they kind of opened up down there that has, it's got a nice vibe. It's a nice atmosphere. They have a bunch of German beers, which are always good. You have, like, beer cheese and pretzel cheese. Mm-hmm. And this is another place that I feel it's kind of like secret and hidden and isn't as busy as a lot of
Absolutely.
Other places.
Yeah.
Just because the sign's very small. It's not like on the street.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of tables outside, but it's not something where it's
And people
be packed.
Kind of assume that it's just like part of the main Grizzly Peak thing, and so they don't venture down there.
So that's another place where there have been times when I'm in Ann Arbor and it's like, all right, none of these places are going to have seen an Old German. And that's I might have just ruined that, but oh well.
You know. It was good while it lasted.
Good while it lasted. Ace, your number two.
Jolly Pumpkin. I'm a sucker for sour beers. They do great sours. Their food is also good. They do a great charcuterie plate, which is a nice, like, you know, after game, you maybe don't want to eat like a full meal. You've been drinking a munch, but like, you know, just nibble on something. They're really good with that stuff.
They have a salad that I adore. I hate sour beer.
Well,
they're
that
disgusting.
Is not the place for you. I think they're fantastic.
I am appalled by this like sour beer renaissance stuff, because it's like, okay, we took the beer and then we made it taste like we did something wrong. That's sour beer.
This is incorrect. This is a bad beer take. This is a terrible beer take.
It's like you drink it and you're like, oh, this
bad beer take.
This tastes poisonous.
No.
This tastes foul.
No.
Something terrible has happened to this beer.
No.
Is all you got? No.
That's I mean, I don't know. Like, do you not like anything with like a hint of sour to it? Like,
well, some things that are sour are fine as long as they're supposed to be sour. And beer to me is definitely not in that category.
You're a beer purist when it comes to adding sour to the
equation. It makes me think like I'm drinking something that I shouldn't be drinking.
Fair enough.
I got a lot of problems.
I will drink them for you.
I got a lot of problems with IPAs too.
Oh man, you are just full of the hot beer takes these days.
It's not hot beer
I can
takes.
Actually almost understand the IPA argument, more
right? Because it's just
argument.
Like we put 70,000
hops everything into this beer that we possibly could.
We have 8,000 international bitterness units.
Yeah, I enjoy IPAs, but they can overdo it a little bit.
Like Two Hearted is perfect.
Yeah.
And no other IPA should ever be made.
I'm not going to go against that, actually. Fair. I do enjoy other IPAs. M43 Juicy, if you haven't had that from Old Nation, is actually incredible.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. And not, like, super hoppy. It's almost like if Oberon was twisted into an IPA a little bit. I know that doesn't necessarily sound good, but, like,
yeah.
You got to trust me on this one. Okay. It's incredible. It's the best thing to come out of the East Lansing area in a very long time. I had to get that shot in.
I have like 75 different jokes, all of which I should not say right now.
Yep.
I already had kind of a... Never mind. Was that your number two?
That was my number two.
My number two is The Last Word.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Which
that's a great
probably
spot.
The best cocktail bar in town, and their food is incredible. The beignets are awesome. They have this oxtail poutine, which is off the hook, as the kids say. And you can get like a real, real, real good Manhattan there. So, it's a spot. That's another one that's kind of like off the beaten path as well. They don't even have a sign.
Yes.
So they do. I've been told they now have a sign. They didn't used to have a sign. Well, that's too bad, but this is another place where it's like not really likely that a lot of tourists and people are just going to run across it and go into it. So
Old Town's a little bit like that too, where it's not as well known, even though it's downtown.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Old Town. I also mentioned that just because I forgot to put it on my list. But
Old Town has the best like waitress in town, and she like paints. I don't know her, but I feel like I go in there and it's like, oh, it's. That
you.
The waitress, she's very motherly. It's wonderful.
Nice.
Ace, you're number one.
I'm not exactly straying from the beaten path here, but I got to go with Ashley's.
Skeeps?
Not Skeeps.
Skeeps?
Skeeps and Ricks, always. But if you're not 19, Ashley's.
Wait, can you get... No, we shouldn't make those allegations.
No, we should not.
No, we should not.
No.
You did it.
As an aside, as a slick aside, and then you stopped it.
Right, yeah,
and
sure.
Pointed it out.
Yeah, okay.
And went, this is the joke.
Yeah, this
Let's
is my
talk
fault.
About the
yeah,
joke.
Yeah, that's my fault. I'm sorry.
So anyway, Ashley's, tremendous beer selection. It's going to be crowded. Like, I mean, it's on State Street. There are going to be a ton of people there. But if you can get a table, you're going to be around a bunch of other Michigan fans. You're going to pick from pretty much any beer that you're going to want to, you're going to think to drink.
Yeah.
Atmosphere inside can be very, very fun after games, especially when they win.
We went there after they hired Harbaugh.
I bet that was also a good time.
And it was a madhouse.
Yeah.
So
if you want to like revel in victory, Ashley's is a good place to go.
Yeah. My number one is also pretty obvious, but it's the Pretzel Bell, which
has a classic that has come back.
Yeah, and they have their basement is great because it has a bunch of TVs, and then there's like a nook with a bunch of TVs in it. So like if you want to watch something else, you can go in the nook and just hang out there. Their food's pretty good. They have pretzel rolls on everything, which is always a good idea.
Yeah, those are delicious.
And great beer selection, and it's really the TV setup in the basement that makes it's I'm a very logistical person. Like if I'm going to go and I want to watch football, I want the TVs to be in a place where nobody's going to walk in front of them.
You know who does that well?
BW3.
Scorekeepers. They've got three big old HD projection screens on the wall.
Well,
I have other criteria
as well.
You know, just in case logistics happens to be, you know, your main point one evening, and you don't mind the, I'm not going to make that joke again.
I've never been.
See, that's wrong.
The only time I went to Rick's.
You went to Michigan.
The only time I went to Rick's, I was like trying out for a Fox game show. It was like during the day. I think it was called. I was back in college. It was 20 years ago.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. Back in college, you go to like, you know, you go there at 1 a.m. when they finally stop charging cover, maybe, hopefully. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible place, but it's like one of those things that you have to go to once just to experience.
Why?
I dragged my brother there like as soon as he turned 21 just to be like, this is what you missed and you should probably be happy about it, but this is what...
Yeah. I turned 21 in Austin, so I didn't...
So not a bad place to turn 21.
Yeah, it was a good time. And I turned 21 a depressing amount of time ago now. Any other shout-outs for things that have propped up and you forgot about?
A quick one for Ravens Club, if you're looking for cocktails, that is another one that does them quite well.
They lost their chef, Frank Ferjean, and I don't like their food anymore, but yeah, their drinks are awesome.
If you're just going for drinks, like get the old-fashioned, you'll be taken care of.
And if you're in Ipsy, go to Malu's because that place is awesome.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
You have. I have.
You have you now. Did.
It is good. Okay. It is quite good.
So there you go. That's our pre-post game advice.
Yeah.
Make it top five.
Yeah, there it is.
Take one more break, come back, and talk about the Bearcats.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us for those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves. This is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law in a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid plan, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level, if you're ready to start your own estate plan, visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.5.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you've ever wondered, whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati.
Yeah, man.
It's getting funky.
It's WKRP in Cincinnati, which was one of those shows that was always, I was a young person, and I was like, oh, that's a stupid old show. Just kind of like their football program.
Good one.
So we have to do the thing where we eat hummus live on air.
Oh, yeah, we're doing that.
We actually ate some in this. Oh, I got it on my pen. Now I have to eat it off the pen. It's good. It's the sriracha carrot one. I've had it before. It has a pleasant heat, not like a too much heat.
Not
but
overwhelming.
It brings something to the party.
A couple different flavors.
Made with white beans and topped with sunflower seeds and apricots or apricots, depending on
whether you pronounce it correctly.
Which one's right?
Apricots.
Okay,
man.
I don't know these things.
I thought you were the foodie.
I don't. Well, I don't talk to people. I only read books. Do you read books?
Occasionally.
Occasionally. Lantana is available at Bush's, Kroger, and Meijer. Favorite flair, favorite question mark? When did I first try it? Question mark. What is this copy?
Clearly not meant to be read word for word.
Lantana, you, this is your copy. LantanaFoods.com.
Don't eat the ones made out of kittens.
Don't eat hummus made out of kittens. Eat Lantana hummus. Thank you, Ace.
You're welcome. We got to keep on message.
Let's talk Bearcats.
They're not good.
Okay.
They're really not good.
So they played Austin Peay last week.
They played Austin Peay, who's entered that game 1-46 in their last 47 games
as an
FCS team. And they outplayed Cincinnati pretty much start to finish, outgained them. We're kind of screwed over by the officials a little bit. Cincinnati didn't get much of a run game going, didn't get much of a passing game going.
That sounds bad.
Against Austin Peay.
Is it Austin Peay or Austin Pay?
I think it's Peay.
Okay.
Yeah. The Governors.
No.
Really. The Governors. They are the Governors.
So they like make NASCAR cars go slow? NASCARs? Is that what the... Stock cars.
There it is.
This is a great segment.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about them. They're really bad.
Don't.
I mean, I've done, you know...
You did a season preview for them.
I did a season preview.
What is their hypothetical strength?
They've got two position groups that are decent. They've got a decent defensive line.
Okay.
They've got a defensive tackle, Cortez Broughton, who's kind of, as Seth described him in the film post this week, a poor man's Mo Hurst. He's about 280 pounds, relies on his first step to kind of knife between guys, which has its ups and downs. So if you get under his pads, you can move him. Another decent defensive tackle, a defensive end who's, they moved down from kind of a hybrid linebacker spot, and he was productive there last year. But they really, their linebacker level got wiped out after last year. So the defensive front did not matter that much. Their other strong point is on the other side of the ball. It's their wideouts. Devin Gray is a former JUCO transfer who was their leading receiver last year and was really the only guy who could manage to be a big play threat while their quarterback is basically a poor man's Alex Hornibrook. He does not have a strong arm, I'll put it that way.
Does he have two or?
Other receivers seem
Is it like a
passable.
Fugitive kind of thing?
I'm lost.
The fugitive.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know what you were referring to. Oh, sorry. Yes, my bad. It's been a long
week. It's a very famous movie.
I know.
this is our most married couple.
Mr.
Segment.
Apricot over here. Yeah. No, it really is. We're sniping at each other now. Good God.
I feel like I'm in a Woody Allen movie. So is this maybe an interesting matchup for like a Nolan Delizio to kind of find his footing against a guy who's
decent? Yeah, like I think we're going to, like, he should be able to get some snaps against Kevin Muhan, the aforementioned hybrid linebacker who's moved down.
Is he Silverberry Muhan's brother?
I'm not sure. I hope so. Cincinnati's had some amazing names come through.
If your name
there.
Was Kevin and your brother's name was Silverberry, wouldn't you be like livid?
I would assume so.
Kevin? Really? Kevin?
I'm just disappointed that Leviticus Payne is no longer around.
Oh, that's yeah, they had a quarterback. Munchie Legault.
Yeah, they also had Cincinnati has had some tremendous name of the year candidates come through.
Man.
This year's team disappointingly light on them, and also disappointingly light on talent.
Was Antonio Kennard on their team like last
year?
Yes,
he was on their team. He is one of the departed starters in their linebacker core. There are some weird Rich Rod throwbacks with their top corners, a guy who unseated Adrian Whitty a few years ago.
There are
some very random Rich Rod connections with this.
But Tommy Tuberville just kind of drove him into the ground, and
he just kind of stopped recruiting, stopped coaching. That's a bad combination,
That'll
right?
happen.
You know, that's why you don't hire Tommy Tuberville if you're Cincinnati. You hire like a young coach who wants to try.
Didn't Tuberville like jump from like the Louisville job or something?
I can't remember his whole progression.
Some crazy like I'm going to be at Cincinnati now like move. Like he didn't get fired.
Maybe it was because he was going to. Because it seems like he's certainly stopped coaching before he actually stopped coaching.
Well, he was going to run for like governor. It sounds like work.
As it turns out, that requires working.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so Fickell, I mean, like, so
let's
they
get
bring,
this segment back yeah, on track so they, for another 20 seconds.
So they bring in Luke Fickell, first-year head coach, Ohio State defense coordinator. Michigan fans probably pretty familiar with him. He has a couple kind of odd hires for coordinator spots.
Okay.
He brings in Mike Denbrock as the offensive coordinator from Notre Dame, and that's kind of a strange hire, in my opinion, since Fickell is a defense guy. Denbrock is an offense guy, but he's an offense guy who wasn't really in charge of his own offense at his previous stop.
Is that
because that's a Brian Kelly offense?
Like Dino Babers is.
That's true.
Like why you'd like go for the Brian Kelly.
But Babers
Kelly
was more
offense.
Of an up and comer, I think. But
no, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't know.
Well, and then on the other side of on defense, he brought in Marcus Freeman, who was an Ohio State linebacker, like
2 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, not very long ago.
How old is he? Literally,
I think he's younger than me.
Well, yeah, obvious.
Thanks.
You're almost 30.
That's true. But let's see. Well, he's older than me.
Oh, jerk. Is he?
He is 31.
31.
Thank you very much.
Barely older than you.
But he was Purdue's linebackers coach for the last 4 years. And that's that he doesn't have any experience as a defensive coordinator until this year.
So
even at lower level schools.
He's just like recruiting at Fickle's the guy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you have to think so. I mean, Seth noted in week one they were running a lot of like what Ohio State's old base defense. They're running a lot of quarters. So they were also busting a lot of quarters. we'll see how that goes against Michigan. The main issue with them is once you get past that defensive line, it's just kind of open season that their players in space are not fast or good. Their corners were getting beat over the top on like 3rd and 22 hitch and goes. Their safeties were overrunning play. Like Michigan's going to get a lot of big plays because anything that gets past the line of scrimmage is just liable to go all the way.
Okay. And then on the other side of the ball, they're just probably going to crawl up in a ball and die.
Yeah, it's tough to even figure out what they're going to try to do because they have four new starters on the offensive line.
And Seth put, like, the cyan ring of death on,
all of them.
It's not.
And
that's not good.
I mean, considering the level of competition that they faced in week one and the level of competition they will be facing tomorrow, that's not going to go so well.
Bodes unwell.
Their main running back couldn't crack 4 yards per carry last year before they lost these four offensive line starters. He's actually pretty decent once he gets into the open field, but the yards per carry tells you how many he has at that. As I mentioned before, their quarterback has a pop gun arm, Hayden Moore. Could be a poor man's Kellen Moore, actually.
Okay, so is there any interesting...
Devin Gray can, like, go up and get it as a receiver. So there will be a test, hopefully, for LaVert Hill and David Long. The main thing from this game is everybody stay healthy.
Okay. Not really what you expect when you put Cincinnati on the schedule. They've been a kind of mid-level team.
Yeah, usually
for
you're thinking
time.
That's going to be like a team that competes in whatever conference they happen to be in that year.
What is it?
The AAC
it's
now.
It's the Big East or
it's,
something?
It's, yeah, it was the Big East. Now it's the American. But, yeah, I mean, this is...
They're in the Missouri Valley this year?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan happened to just catch them at, like,
the Tuberville.
The nadir of where their program's going to be at. And I would expect Fickell to build it back up quite nicely once he gets recruiting going. But for the moment, this is at a severe talent deficit that isn't running anything.
Special teams, maybe?
Their kicker missed an extra point last week, and their punter's Australian, so they They got an Aussie punter.
There we go.
We found something good.
That guy is that. I mean, that'll be a challenge because
don't rough him.
Well, also he might just like make fumbles happen like they do. You know, I think Aussie punter is going to be. Does he have a name? Is his name literally Aussie punter? And he's like from New Jersey. That would be
I'm
even
scrolling.
Better.
Where is especially James Smith? That is not a fun name. Boo!
All right, that's it. We'd like to thank our sponsors one more time: Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Homeshore Lending, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Peak Wealth Management.